Hi, my name is Ben Boyer, and I'm a professor of entrepreneurship at ESCP Business School and a behavioral scientist. I'm also the host of the podcast We All Make Mistakes, powered by ESCP's media, The Choice. And this here is a bonus episode from our series, right on time to celebrate International Day of Women's Rights. I had the great pleasure to speak with Dame Inge Biel, the former and first female CEO of Lloyd's of London, a three-century-old insurance market, about the choices she has made throughout her career. Our conversation covered many topics from how she found the gumption to take on leadership roles in the insurance business, to how she prioritized inclusivity in the workplace, and even what she would do differently looking back now. As the first female CEO of a major insurance company, an industry still largely viewed as a masculine one, many of her experiences and the challenges she was confronted with were often intertwined with gender. Dame Inge Biel shared with us her experience growing as a woman leader, the role model that made a difference, and how she accepted the mission to be this role model for other women and beyond. We hope you enjoy this excerpt from our conversation and find it as inspiring as we did. When you decided to join the finance/insurance industry and set foot in the city of London, which back in the days would have been probably one of the most male-dominated industry, were you aware of the sex and gender stereotypes that may play a role in the remaining part of your career? Because we know that professions tend to be stereotypes. For instance, nurses tend to be stereotypes as being women. Doctors tend to be stereotyped as being male. There's a lot of research on that. But where were you of these stereotypes, and how did it affect or not your decision to join the industry?
At that time, it didn't affect me at all. I didn't even think about it. I'd moved from this small town in southern England to the big bright lights of London. And I just so wanted to be in London. I looked for a job, and it didn't actually matter to me what the job was. In fact, I remember the same week I was off, the 80s, it was a very different environment. Mm. Things were booming and there were lots of jobs around. And I got offered two jobs. One was actually going into the aviation sector to be an accountant. And one was to be an underwriter in the insurance world. And actually, they were just offering me more money for this insurance job. And that's why I took it. It didn't occur to me to even think about the types of people that worked in it, because I was I was young, and I just wanted to stay in London and get a job. And I thought actually I might only do it for a year or so. I had no idea I'd stay in it for nearly 40 years.
Yeah, I think that's, we hear a lot of success stories like that, where people thought it was going to be an in-between job, and then people end up staying in the job. Now, fast forward a few decades, when you become CEO of Lloyd's and you're the first female CEO of Lloyd's, do you feel a certain weight on your shoulders? When you take the top job at Lloyd's, is that something that plays in your mind, the fact that you're the first female CEO of the company in more than three centuries?
Only because of the media attention. When I was already working in the Lloyd's insurance market, I was the CEO of one of the companies in Lloyd's. So the Lloyd's is a complicated institution. It's not a unitary company. And when the previous CEO of Lloyd's was leaving, I remember that first initial gut feeling was, oh, I want that job. And I wanted that job because I wanted to modernize it. Because when I was running this company within the market, I realized how old-fashioned things were. And having been living and working in the US, I'd worked for a big American conglomerate for many years that was very modern, very driven, always changing things. I'd lived in France, I'd lived in Germany and Switzerland. You know, I'd had quite a vast experience. And I came back to London to work within the market, and I realized that it didn't seem to have moved on. I mean, Lloyd's was 325 years old by then. Mm. So it had a lot of tradition and history. So I thought, gosh, why is it so backward? Nobody's really been prodding it and saying, you've got to modernize yourself. So there I was as a CEO in one of the companies saying, I'd love to have that CEO of Lloyd's job because it needs to modernize. I don't want it to become a museum or an old-fashioned sort of artifact. So that was my initial feeling. I didn't imagine for one moment that they would actually approach me for the job. I really didn't. And in fact, when I did first get a call from the search firm, the executive search firm, I just thought they just wanted a woman on the list. I just thought, oh, they're never going to hire a woman. But then it started to get more serious and I ended up getting the job. But at that point, I didn't think, oh, I'm the first female CEO. I thought, wow, I've got a challenge on my hands. I've got to modernize this place. I've got to introduce technology to an entirely paper-based environment. But then the media headlines started, and there were all these headlines about the first female CEO. But then, as I got into the job, I got messages from quite a lot of women saying how I was becoming a role model for them. And I thought, and then I had this sort of additional pressure thinking, oh, I mustn't let all the women down, you know, because I thought, oh, here I am. I'm now the first woman. I can't let them down. I've got to do a really good job. So there was the pressure of the job itself, but I did feel an additional pressure because I so didn't want to let the women down. And in fact, it was a couple of years before I got the Lloyd's job when I was working with a personal coach and he'd asked me what my personal purpose was in life. And I'd never been asked this before. And he made me think, and I went away and thought about it. And I said, you know what? It's to empower women in business. Because I realized when I look back over my decades of working, I thought, what have I always been trying to do? I've been trying to promote women. I've been trying to encourage them to take those big roles. I've been trying to encourage them to stay in the industry, to not leave insurance, you know, all these things. And so I realized I've got to empower women in business. And that became my personal purpose in life.
Did you have any role models yourself, and especially female role models?
Were there many? There weren't many. I had my first female role model when I actually left work. I said I walked out of the office after 8 years or 9 years at work and I went traveling. It wasn't until I actually got a job at the BBC's office, the British Broadcasting Corporation's office in Sydney, where there was a female manager. So a woman was running the whole office there in Sydney. And it wasn't until I saw her, a female that I was working for, I thought, wow, you can actually make it as a woman. I thought, and it was, she just left a lasting impression on me. And she was really the first female role model I ever saw in my career.
I think what's really interesting in what you're saying and what I can sense from the beginning of our discussion is that a lot of the things you've done have been very fresh and spontaneous. And there is a body of literature in psychology around self-handicapping and the fact that a lot of people don't, or it's not the only reason, but never get to succeed because they're kind of self-handicapping themselves. They're telling themselves that they won't succeed, that they're not good enough, or that, you know, the typical job is only offered to men, for instance. And it seems from our discussion so far that you've just done what everyone should be doing. It's just you go for the job, you give your best, and you don't really care about what other people think about you.
Yeah, and I talk about it, particularly for women, as smashing through your own glass ceiling, because you do have to push a bit, perhaps beyond your natural comfort. And I've noticed this because over the years, you know, I've seen a woman and I've wanted to promote her, say, to be the team leader of a certain team, and she says no. And I try and persuade her. Sometimes it's taken me a year to persuade these women to take those jobs. Then when they're in that job, they do an absolutely amazing, amazing job of it. And then they're so pleased and they're so happy with themselves that they did that. And I'm trying to speed things up to say, let's get you there on day one and not take a year to get you there. Because there is something, and it is a, it's a, can be a broad societal thing. It can be in education. It can be in families. There are many, many assets to this and factors. And I'm not an expert in them, but I do know how I responded. And this sort of, I talk about it as being very impulsive and not scared of much. You know, having the courage just to walk out or having the courage to do something, but also being proactive. I talk a lot about actually be proactive about what you want, because far too often people will make assumptions. They may not even ask you because they may have already assumed that, for instance, you might not want to move to a different country for whatever reason. You know, they make their own reasons that why you might not want something. And therefore, it's up to you often to tell people very, very openly what you want and what you're willing to do. And I can remember when I was based in Paris and my boss, who was based in Munich in Germany, was moving on, actually moving back to the US because it was a US company. And I was sitting there in Paris expecting the company to offer me the job in Munich or to ask if I wanted it. Nobody approached me. And I was sitting there thinking, this is a bit strange. So I picked up the phone directly to the HR leader in the US and said, the job in Munich, I mean, what's the process for filling that role? Because I'd like it. And they said, oh, we had no idea you would be prepared to move from Paris to Munich because I'd really, really expressed a desire a year or so earlier to be based in Paris. And it was from that one thing I had said at that time that they assumed I wouldn't want the job in Munich. And it wasn't because I got the job in Munich because I picked up the phone and said I wanted it.
Yeah,
and those are the things that can happen in your career.
Very interesting. And there is actually some research when looking at the gender pay gap that one of the, I would say, explanation that's offered behind it, women are more ready to accept the first offer and just say yes to the first offer when men are more likely to negotiate. So in a way, to be empowered as a woman, it's all about being as proactive as one should be. And I don't really like to make it, there is a lot of literature on leadership styles, and the literature calls them male and female leadership styles, which to me, and in my own research, I prefer to talk about independent and interdependent style, whether you're very autocratic, independent, which tends to be more the case of male leaders, or whether you're more democratic and interdependent, which tends to be more the case of female leaders. There's on this topic, something interesting I wanted to ask you too, which is, did you ever felt some sort of what we'd call the imposter syndrome? That the fact that you was there, but you needed to prove yourself more than a male CEO would have needed to prove himself?
Yes, and I still feel it even today. It's quite amazing when I challenge myself on this. If I'm going to, say, a big industry gathering and I walk into the room and it's 98% men, as it so often is still, I feel immediately, what am I doing here? And I sort of have to gear myself up, really sort of encourage myself inside to have the courage to speak up, to participate, to ask questions. And I learned this a long time ago about sort of setting yourself a goal when you go into a meeting. Because I often just used to be petrified of these all-male gatherings. Mm. And I used to set myself a target before I went in to say, Inga, you're going to ask at least one question. And then if I didn't do that, afterwards I would sort of kick myself and give myself a hard time. And so I used to have to set these quite specific goals. And I used to sit there sometimes gearing myself up, almost sweating, thinking, like, you're going to ask this question. I mean, absolutely crazy. And it still sometimes happens today. Mm. It doesn't ever go away, but you learn, I think, techniques as to how to get around it.
Mm. And how important is it for you to be kind of coach, and how much support do you think needs to be in place for women to be kind of supported by other women? We often hear a lot of women that say, you know, if only, and you mentioned yourself, if only I had someone I could talk to, that's another woman that could understand my point of view. How important is this, and what can be done to ensure that this is done in the workplace?
These days, I still encourage women's groups or women's networks, even though most of the time now in the workplace they're called, you know, gender networks or gender balance networks, because nobody wants one gender to feel excluded anymore. And you know that you can't change the world unless everyone's involved. Mm. So you've got to bring different genders together. But I would still encourage women's networks to support each other, because when I was at Lloyd's and I was driving through all this change, sometimes it was very, very difficult. I felt at times a bit like Arnie Schwarzenegger in The Terminator, just sort of walking towards all these missiles and having to avoid them, but sort of keep this sort of Teflon outer coating so that these missiles would skim off me, and I just had to keep focused and keep walking on. But that's really, really, really tough to do on your own. But I had a really good, strong insurance network of women, senior women. I used to meet with them sometimes in a small group, sometimes in a larger group, and they would support me, urge me on. I would be able to complain in a very safe environment about something that had happened and this guy had said that or other. And then they would urge me to keep going, and I'd walk out after that meeting full of energy again and the determination to carry on. Now, they might be all, whoever you are, whatever your background, you might find niches of people, types of groups that do that for you. And that's what you sometimes need. You don't necessarily need to have the conversations with all types of people. Sometimes you just need that really core support network. And often for women, it can be other women.
Thanks for listening. Are you eager for more inspiration from Daming a Bill? Our original episode from the series We All Make Mistakes is also available wherever you're listening. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us 5 stars or hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you just can't get enough, check out Her Voice, a sister podcast from The Choice, which aims to contribute to women's visibility in their domains of expertise. Thanks for joining me, Ben Voyer, a professor of entrepreneurship at ESCP Business School.